So we just heard that as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man blind from birth. And then immediately, the disciples have a question. And let's be honest, it's not a good question. It's not asking what they can do to help the man. It's not asking if anyone has some extra money to donate to him. No, they ask, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Yikes. Jesus really has his work cut out for him with these guys. This man has not asked them for an opinion or a theological explanation. He hasn't asked them to debate or to assign blame for his condition. He's just there, existing. And the disciples try to turn him into a religious riddle. Whose fault is this? Who can we blame? Who messed up? Honestly, it's an ancient question, but it is still so relevant today. When someone gets sick or loses a job, struggles with depression, gets divorced, has a child with disabilities, develops chronic pain, or ends up poor, many people's minds will try to make a connection. Maybe not out loud. People are usually more polite than that. But there is the wonder, what caused this? What did they do? What did their family do? Surely there must be a reason. This week, I saw a random Instagram post of a mother explaining that her 21-year-old son had done nothing wrong when he was hit by a car while walking across the street. He was using the crosswalk. He had a walk sign. He checked both directions. Then, out of nowhere, a distracted driver hit him long before she even put on the brakes. The mother was explaining all of this because there had been questions and suggestions that somehow her son was the one to blame. She was having to defend her son, who was perhaps forever changed as a result, that he had done nothing wrong. It's blaming the victim, and it happens all the time. We are deeply attached to the idea that somehow the world is fair, that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. We know that's not actually true, and it's never been true. But sometimes it helps us feel safe. I think that we rationalize it, that if suffering is earned, then maybe we can avoid suffering by behaving correctly. But Jesus will have no part of that. "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," he said. In other words, you guys are asking the wrong question. Biblical scholar Amy Jill Levine points out that the disciples' question assumes disability must be caused by sin. And Jesus rejects that assumption outright. He refuses to let this man's life be reduced to a punishment or a defect or some ghastly divine retribution. He refuses that whole framework. And thank God he does. Because for too long, religion has been very good at blaming people for the bodies that they live in. Too often, the church has treated difference as a problem to explain, a tragedy to pity, or a defect to fix. But that is not how Jesus begins. He does not begin with blame. He begins simply by seeing. He saw a man blind from birth. He doesn't see a case study. He doesn't see an object lesson. He sees a human being, and that matters. Levine says she wishes Jesus had sat the disciples down right then and there and given them a full lesson on disability. And honestly, same. Because their question is dreadful. It assumes that children bear the guilt from their parents. It assumes a person could somehow sin before birth. It assumes disability means divine displeasure. And for a God who is love, none of that holds. Mary Kolo makes this point beautifully. She says, in Jesus' world, blindness was not just a physical reality. It could also mean exclusion from full social and religious participation. So when Jesus meets this man, he is not merely dealing with biology and physiology. He is confronting a whole system that has sorted this person into the category of an outsider. Jesus acts not only as a healer, but also as a liberator. And I think that's where this gospel gets painfully relevant. Because even now, being outside whatever society thinks normal is so often made harder, not simply by the difference itself, but by the world around it. Stairs with no ramp, by schools and churches and workplaces designed for one kind of body and one kind of mind that want everyone to dress the same and walk the same and think the same and talk the same and love the same. The true problem is not disability or difference. The true problem is a failure of community. And then there's the irony at the heart of the story. The man born blind is the one who sees the most clearly. The disciples cannot see past their blame. The neighbors can't see past who this man used to be. His parents can't see past their fear. The religious authorities cannot see past their certainty. But this man who began the chapter unable to see Jesus at all, ends up recognizing him the most clearly. Caroline Lewis notes that the miracle itself is actually very short. The healing isn't the main event. The real action is what unfolds afterward, with the testimony, the argument, the courage, the expulsion, the recognition, and then worship. In other words, the point is not merely that the man receives sight. The point is that he becomes a witness. And he's not a very polished one, by the way. He's gloriously unimpressed by the theological games that the people around him are playing. One thing I do know, he says, that though I was blind, now I see. That's it. It's not a dissertation. It's not a doctrinal thesis. Just this is what happened to me. It's a testimony in its purest form. Which leaves us, I think, with some hard questions. When we encounter pain or difference or disability, do we respond with compassion or with diagnosis? And for us as a community, how will we stop confusing difference with deficiency? How will we become the kind of community where no one is treated as a theological problem to solve, but as a beloved person to be embraced? Because in the end, the deepest blindness in this story is not the man born blind. It is everyone who looks at another human being and only sees a problem.